Marvel Studios' Werewolf by Night is unlike anything else Marvel has done before. Critics are calling it one of the best homages to classic horror.
Good luck. I'll be rotting for you.
You'll wanna see this, darling.
Werewolf by Night, now streaming only on Disney Plus.
Following program has adult language and plenty of spoilers. Listener, be advised.
A can of something.
I did.
That was fucking crispy sounding. It sounds like I'm in a fucking commercial. Oh, and he's one of those. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Marvel Superheroes Podcast. I'm a legal machine. With me is
Diablo Frank
and
Fryhole
and
Senor Frixit.
And we're going to talk about Disney Plus's Werewolf by Night, a 55-minute short film released on whenever it was. What was it, October 7th or 8th or something?
Yeah, like say Friday. Probably Friday. Like 3 o'clock in the morning or some shit. And what's funny is my sleep schedule was messed up, so I probably could have gone ahead and watched it early. But I'm glad I waited. I wouldn't have wanted to try to take it in at 4 o'clock in the fucking morning and some bullshit like that.
Yeah. I don't think you need to do that.
If you can believe it, this is like third time we've done a podcast related to Werewolf by Night. One of our earliest podcasts, and boy, you can tell by the audio quality, was Tigra, and she debuted in Werewolf by Night, and we talked a bit about him then. And then we did a whole episode specifically on the Dead of Night Marvel Max miniseries, a mature readers miniseries, and a lot of my experience with the character was covered there. But, you know, Fryhole, we haven't gotten you on any of the horror ones before, I don't think, and I know you're a horror fan. Do you have any prior experience with Werewolf by Night?
Yeah. Originally, the first place I came across them was Tomb of Dracula, I want to say. I have the Werewolf by Night, the Max explicit content. He was also a big part of the Frankencastle, the Punisher story.
When the Punisher became a Frankenstein Punisher, and he did that whole, like, Monster Squad type thing, I want to say that's, I think, the only Bloodstone, like, story I've read.
Yeah, I was actually going to touch on that a little bit. Mac, have you ever heard of Frankencastle?
Oh, no. Let's hear what fucking weird zombie stupid fucking mashup Marvel went to here. What was his, I'm going to say early to mid 2000s or 2011 or something.
Norman Osborn sent his Thunderbolts after Frank Castle, and Dak and Wolverine's son ended up cornering him on a roof, cut his arm off and cut his head off. The Legion of Monsters, they're kind of like Morlocks where they all live underground. They took all his parts and put him back together again, like Frankenstein version. For fans of the Punisher, like, I remember just seeing tons of online hate toward the entire thing. And the writer was like, well, suck it up because it's going to be this way for a while. It was pretty big arc. It was at least 8 issues, I think.
Yeah, I'm guessing it ended out that run because I saw that the resolution of that story was, I think, in the 23rd issue of a series. But I think the actual Frankencastle part came in after they'd done, like, regular Punisher stuff. And then the Frankencastle took over for, like, a year.
Yeah, it started in Dark Reign, the list. Then it was Punisher 11 through 16, Frankencastle 17 through 21, and then there was a crossover with Dark Wolverine, number 88-89.
I loved it, dude, Frank, because it was so fucking bizarre. Like, they bring back Frank Castle as a Frankenstein. And I remember the first time I read, I'm like, this is stupid. And then you start reading, you're like, I'm reading a comic book. Like, fucking unclench, you asshole. So I start reading it, and I'm like, this is fun. Like, it was. It was a fun book. I bought the trade. I enjoyed it so much. I had the floppies and the trade, because it was just really fun. I sometimes forget that you don't have to be steeped in this fucking, you know, the whole lore and continuity. Like, you can have these kind of wackiness because it's a fucking comic book.
They had the one that I saw, because there was an issue that featured Elsa Bloodstone. I had Dan Brereton artwork, so that looked pretty cool too. It was obviously Brereton's known for his horror stuff, not necessarily for his Punisher stuff, but I thought the mashup actually worked reasonably well in the little exposure I had to it. And I guess Punisher's one of those guys that they have these huge veers on, because of course when they did the Marvel Knights series, they had the supernatural Punisher, where he'd put the sigil on windows, or he'd put his sigil on a window and he'd respond. And he was having, you know, mystical weapons that he was going to do by angels and shit. And then, of course, there was the time where he was a black man, which was a very peculiar choice of this that have been made with the Punisher over the years.
The Frankencastle story you're talking about with Brereton was Frankencastle number 21. And if you are a fan of his art, it's gorgeous.
Yeah, we're getting away from Werewolf by Night, though. So what other experience did you have with him?
Legion of Monsters. Kind of a lot of newer stuff, I guess.
Did you ever see the Power Record? I think there was a Power Record that had Tomb of Dracula versus Werewolf by Night. I don't know if it's taken from that issue of Tomb of Dracula or not. I always remember seeing that image when I would have the, you know, the, I don't know if you ever had any of the Power Records, but they had that image on the back inside cover.
Oh, no. No, I don't. What is a Power Record?
So, yeah, that pretty much answers that question then.
Power Records presents The Curse of the Werewolf. As Jack Russell scales the peak to Castle Dracula, he is bathed in the light of the full moon, and Jack Russell once again becomes the werewolf. However, inside the castle...
My dear young lady, welcome to my castle. I hope you will enjoy my hospitality.
Suddenly, he hears the harsh, guttural growling of the werewolf.
What? A beast attacks here in my castle? Now he shall finally perish.
The battle begins.
Power Records, they were around in the 70s where you would buy a comic book reproduction on heavy stock Baxter paper and a cardstock cover. And in the sleeve, the inside sleeve of the comic, they would have a 45 RPM record. And you would have an audio drama of the comic book on record that you could play while you're reading along with the comic book.
Oh, shit, dude. I had one of those as a kid and I found it online not too long ago. And it was with Dracula, Werewolf. But it wasn't Marvel. It was, God, I don't know. It might have been
produced specifically for Power Records, because I think Neil Adams did some stuff for them, especially some licensed stuff where it was just theirs and their product. They owned it and they produced the comic books.
Okay, this was definitely a tie-in with Universal.
Oh, probably. You really think it was? Because a lot of people were like borrowing the Universal likenesses to some degree and changing them just enough to get away with it.
They mentioned in the radio drama that Maliva, the gypsy woman, I don't know if she would come under fair use because
of I don't think so, because I think that pretty much everything we know of related to the Wolfman is entirely created for the movies. It's not based on a work of fiction. If they refer to him as the Wolfman, if they're referencing the gypsy, then yeah, you're pretty confident that is a Universal tie-in then.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I still liked that after I heard it 30 years later.
It's no use. We'll never capture him.
Stop whining, you fool! You've lost your love, but not yet your life. The monster's had a full day to calm down. Help me restrain him, or you will spend yet another day in my dungeon, Baron Frankenstein.
That voice, the hounds in her ears, that hated voice must be stilled forever.
You dare! You dare lay your paws on me! On me! Low beast, you'll die for this! Die at the hands of the Prince of Darkness! For I am Dracula!
How are we going into the movie? Like, was this something we were anticipating? Because it's definitely something different from Marvel.
I just heard about it like last week, and then all of a sudden, boom, it's one of us who wasn't me said, hey, it's on in our group chat.
I remember, wasn't there just some random trailer for it that popped up out of nowhere recently? And I don't think anybody had a fucking clue this was actually being made.
Oh,
right?
Was it at PulseCon?
I don't even know what that means.
At PulseCon? They had like an online convention to show all their upcoming products. I want to say it.
I'm not familiar with PulseCon either. I know that they had the D23 a few weeks back. And then they also, I think Fantastic Fest had a secret screening of Werewolf by Night and Hellraiser a couple of weeks ago. But I've never heard of PulseCon either. What is that?
It's for Hasbro. There was a Marvel Legends panel. There was a G.I. Joe panel. And they show all their upcoming shit that they're selling for the next year.
It was D23 when it was shown.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Yeah, I'd been following the production somewhat. I was aware that this was a thing they were working on, because I don't know if they announced it last year during their upfronts for Marvel stuff, but being a little bit more horror-centric, I was like, oh, they're doing Werewolf by Night, and my girlfriend, I thought, was still a fan of Gael Garcia Bernal. She was into him earlier in our relationship. We went to see this movie with Diego Luna about redneck soccer players. So I thought that she was going to be into seeing it, so I was monitoring that for her. And then, like you said, a few weeks back, they released that trailer that was very... It's amazing. Grindhouse was a flop, but there's so much stuff that's so indebted to Grindhouse. People seem to really like that aesthetic, and it gets used a lot for stuff, despite that movie not being particularly successful.
I avoided all spoilers. I wanted to walk in, and again, the first time I remember, we saw the trailer, then I heard it might be a comedy, and I'm like, oh God, I hope it's not a comedy. And the last thing I heard was, no, it's not a comedy. It just has some humor to it. And I'm just like, So honestly, I walked in with my expectations a little low, because I kept thinking, oh, it's going to be like some kind of wacky Abbott and Costello meet Frankenstein, some bullshit like that. And I was just like, oh, I hope it's not. I burned in the corner and stuff. I was just like, oh, they're going to play kind of like an old horror movie.
Okay, so it was a D23. But the trailer only came out like 4 weeks ago. I had heard nothing about this until that trailer dropped, as the kids say.
I had heard that there was a possibility of it in some Moon Knight forum or something I was looking at, but yeah, that was as far as I heard.
I remember seeing about it.
Yeah, because I remember following that too. The guys were talking like it was a complete mystery.
I've never read the comic. I've never read the old stuff. I only read like the more recent stuff.
But hold on. Because we already did that episode. What I'm saying is, were you following the development of the movie when they were announcing people being cast and stuff, and then it was coming and stuff? It got you by surprise?
Kind of, yeah. Because I was thinking, because honestly, I didn't know what they were going to do. Because like, at that point, all we had were Star Trek. All we had was like the Marvel movie. So, of course, I'm thinking they're going to be in the same vein. And then after I saw Moon Knight, I'm like, oh, okay, well, they can do kind of this dark other side of the coin type universe monster. So I was kind of like, okay. And then again, I was interested in the trailer, see the trailer, I hear it's a comedy, get slightly disappointed. And then it was a joyful surprise to see it, that it came out and it was what it was.
The consensus, there wasn't much time to anticipate this thing, because there was such a small window between, especially the trailer and the show dropping, that, you know, it just, we kind of took it as it is. And I know I mentioned, I tweeted out myself as I was starting to watch it, and Mac was like, that's already out? I think both of you guys were like that, weren't you?
Well, Mac sent a text that was out, and I was like, oh, no shit, so.
I don't think it was me, I think it was Frank. I didn't know. You sent like the shot of like the opening credits or something, and I was like, are you watching a new trailer? And you're like, no, it's out. And I'm like, wait, it's out? So we got the trailer 3 or 4 weeks ago, and now suddenly it's just released. It was very, very bizarre. I mean, I realize it's October, but I thought it would be coming out some other time. I don't have a clue. I don't really keep up to date on some of these things either, so it could have just been me realizing this thing was kind of coming out of nowhere. But
well, they didn't hype this much at all, and it's not like it's a movie they're having to promote or something. So Marvel can be really secretive when they want to be, and I think they just sort of kept this under wraps until the last minute, it seemed like.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I definitely got the old Universal Monster vibe, and on top of that, I have a crush on Laura Donnelly, who played Elsa
Bloodstone.
Yeah, she was actually in another kind of period superhero piece called The Nevers. It's on Amazon. It's pretty good.
She reminds me of a cross between like Kristen Ritter and Anne Hathaway.
Absolutely, dead on.
Like she looks like she's like their third older sister or younger. I don't know their ages. Please, nobody wiki shame me. I'm not trying to age shame anyone, but she just looks like the three of them could totally be related, and I would absolutely. Has some of the Kristen Ritter like snark to her. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was like creeping me out whenever I was watching that they're not actually related. Very, very bizarre. Anyway, things I liked. I liked the I don't know what do you call these types of plots where it's like it's a clue, kind of like a contest, but it's also kind of like a blood sport kind of. You know what I mean? Where
World's the game video kind of game thing.
Yeah, it's like a video game. You know, the whole plot is a video game.
Yeah. Right?
Where you're just trying to people are going to get picked off until you get to the resolution, and it's it's that it's like Knives Out or all this stuff. Like you know what the defined end of the thing's gonna be, so you just go along for the ride. It's such a simple kind of formula, but I think it always suckers me in. You know what I mean? Like when they're introducing the different characters that we're gonna be fighting and that they're all not gonna survive, but someone's gonna get the bloodstone off of the monster and get the new. You know what I mean? It's just like I'm a sucker for that stuff.
When they introduced, I love that you got the whole blood pack coming in where, they're all kind of like these assassins and they all have different looks. And then, of course, the main character has like his ancestral paint on. I was, like I said, I still thought it was a comedy whenever they bring out Ulysses Blood and he's a wind-up doll and he's performing and she's kind of going over the top his wife, how he was a great lover and stuff. And I was just like, oh, wait, are they gonna, like, is this gonna get trying to be comedy or, like, where are we going with this? So you did like Werewolf by Night?
Yes, I did.
Oh, I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I think it was the perfect format. I'm so glad they did Right by Man Thing.
Especially when it's like, it's going to be 55 minutes long. I was like, there should be no issue keeping my attention span through this. So I was pleasantly surprised by that because I didn't really know, you never know how they're going to do these plots. They could do American Werewolf in London. It could be more like a Moon Knight thing where the dude's tying himself to his bed every night so he doesn't escape and go on a murderous run. I didn't know how they were going to do this. So
we're glad they didn't go that route though, right? Like for starters, they kind of already did that with Moon Knight, but also isn't the whole Wolfman thing a little bit played out at this point if they were going to try to do it old school like that?
I mean
that's pretty much the Benicio del Toro movie was pretty much that too, right?
How old is that movie?
I mean, okay, it's about like a decade plus. I'll give you that. But the thing is, that movie didn't do that great. I feel like it would have been like super played out if we'd actually done the typical Werewolf by Night story, particularly from the where they were riffing on the old Universal, like directly story-wise. Like, I like this because they were giving us a different flavor of Werewolf, like more of the later incarnation of the character. And I never jived well with the old version. I like the newer version. It's a little more comfortable with who he is and how he operates and shit.
And he could control himself more? Is that
to a greater degree? I mean, obviously he wasn't entirely in his control. That's kind of a major plot point, but more comfortable with the fact that he changes and how he addresses that.
See, in the latest Legion of Monsters stuff and the Frankencastle stuff, he's in full control. Kind of like a hobo's version of Wolverine, I guess.
Yeah, I was thinking about that because when I went back and I listened to the old Werewolf by Night episode we did, and then I went and I looked at some of the stuff. I was a legit like follower of this character for a brief period there in the early 90s. He was regularly appearing in Marvel Comics Presents, and I think they were trying to capture some of that Ghost Rider action, so they made him a biker, and they made it to where he'd come to terms with his werewolf side and could essentially change at will. I don't know if he could do it during the day back then or if it had to be nighttime, but I know that he could go back and forth between the different forms.
The Marvel Explicit stuff was very Moon Knight-ish, that the wolf would leave him messages on the wall.
Where I'm talking is more, like in the 90s, he was more like, you said, like more of an action hero, somebody who could shift at will. And he turned up in the Nomad series, I think, where he was in the Moon Knight series because it had Gambit guest starring as well. And so they're all teaming up and shit. And he was like a proper horror Midnight Suns type of character. He never got his own ongoing series. And most of the stuff was written by Lynn Kaminsky, who I've always felt was an underrated writer. And I liked that proactive, cooler take where he's like, he's kind of into it and he can go back and forth, like he said, and he'd be more part of this monster community and not just be a guy who's like pissing his pants every time he wolfs out.
Yeah.
And see, did you just know Lauren Donnelly from The Nevers? Because that was that show that Joss Whedon was doing before he got canceled. And they scrubbed his involvement. And then I don't know, is that even going to come back now or that they tanked that pretty thoroughly?
No.
I had heard that they had a second season confirmed, but then I heard it was canceled too. So it's one of those internet things, I think. We'll see.
And then she was also apparently on Outlander, which I thought was still happening, but I guess that finally wrapped up. Because that's like the biggest thing Starz ever had.
Episode, because I thought that was going to be a series like the movie Outlander.
Oh, Highlander?
No, Outlander.
Oh, Outlander. I don't know what Outlander is.
Yeah, it was with, the fuck is his name? The guy who played Christ in Passion of the Christ.
Oh, Jim Cavazel?
Yes.
The Jesus freak psycho mega guy?
He's like an outer space enforcer, kind of. And he ends up crash landing on Earth back during Viking days. And there's like a fucking creature and everything.
So who are you, Outlander? And why were you there? Hunting. Hunting what?
Dragons. You think you can frighten us with children's stories? Why don't you tell me about your dragon?
It's just a smudge of light in the darkness. It kills men, beasts, everything. And it smells like death.
There's nothing like that here.
Yes, there is. This thing has carved out a territory, and you are in it.
We're not leaving. We're gonna hunt this thing down and kill it.
Hunting won't work. It's too powerful. We trap it.
Boy, you were in for a rude awakening, although Outlander was a sci-fi-ish kind of thing, fantasy thing.
He joined up with the Vikings, you know, to kill the monster or whatever. So that's what I was thinking it was. And I watched the first episode. I kept waiting. I'm like, where's the monster? Where's the spaceships?
What's with this time-traveling chick? Because it's just enough sci-fi fantasy where you're like, it could still be the same thing.
Yeah. I know she was on that series, but I didn't watch her there. I loved her on The Nevers. Her character was awesome. And dude, she's really pretty. Good actress.
Well, we did mention Anna Hathaway crossed with Kristen Ritter. So it's pretty much implied.
Yeah.
That all those women are my speed.
And then the dude who played Jack Russell, he was in that movie Old, right?
Oh, no shit. You're right. Yeah.
He was in the Shamalama-lama-ding-dong.
I couldn't figure out where I'd seen him before. You're right. Yep.
He's actually one of the biggest Latin movie stars, like in Latin America. I kind of wonder how strong his command of the English language is, because he does not have a lot of dialogue in this movie. But he's a huge star. I think probably he's best known for Y Tu Mama También, but he's been in tons of stuff. And like, both him and his buddy Diego Luna have been penetrating the U.S. market for the last few years. Luna is, of course, also working for Disney on Andor.
Okay.
Oh, that's that guy.
Well, I freaking liked him on this show. I would definitely buy into him being Jack Russell, so.
And just, man, he looked fantastic as a Wolfman, dude. Oh, I'm sorry, Werewolf by Night. He just looks fantastic.
So I'll say I like the plot formula. I like the runtime. I thought it was pretty funny, pretty entertaining. I thought Man-Thing looked fantastic. Like, it looked so good, especially compared to some other Disney Plus CGI that is currently in production and airing that we're not going to talk about on this podcast because it's going to conclude soon, and then we'll talk about it in another podcast. But I thought Man-Thing looked great. He was on the screen.
I know. What are we talking about?
That was obviously fucking She-Hulk.
Okay.
So Man-Thing, it's only, he appeared in maybe 30 seconds total of the show, right? But I thought it looked pretty good. And I'm sure the black and white didn't, you know, hurt either. I'm sure it's easier to render believable CGI, not believable, quote unquote, but more convincing CGI in black and white.
As you mentioned, we've recently seen a big green character that does not feel like it inhabits the environment at all, where the black and white probably helps to save us from the surreality of this green big green thing in the midst of everything else. So I think it might have worked kind of good, though, because with all the greenery in the garden, and he kind of may have mingled a little bit more too.
Sure. Yes, Rahul.
As far as like cameos, did you guys find it weird? Like when they're first starting the show and they're walking down the hall and they're showing the different battles and stuff. And the very first one they showed was Null from Thor with that axe Yarnborn sticking out of the back of his head. Did you guys see that?
I did not, sir. Give me some background on what you're talking about.
Are you talking about Null, all the severed heads and stuff in the hall?
Or not Null. I'm sorry. Gore the God Butcher.
Oh, was there Gore?
Or do they have one that's more of a comic accurate version that they threw into this movie?
Yes, it was comic accurate, and they showed him with Yarnborn in the back of his head.
I'm sure there's some YouTube explainer video out there where they really like go deep into the Easter eggs and stuff. I wonder, watching it one time and trying to take in the heads as they were popping up in the various images and stuff, I didn't see anything that really triggered anything like, oh, that must be so and so. I missed that because I didn't read the gore stuff, so I wouldn't have caught that. I mean, obviously I caught the Marvel superheroes at the very beginning of the movie, and I love that they dropped that reference to where monsters dwell, but beyond that, I didn't catch any Easter eggs along those lines. In fact, I got confused, because when I would see stills of the Ulysses Bloodstone corpse, I kept thinking that was the monster Frankenstein from the old 70s series, so it threw me where it's like, oh, that's supposed to be Bloodstone. Okay, I totally misunderstood that.
See, I didn't think it was Frankenstein. I thought that it was the zombie, Garth.
Simon Garth, iZombie?
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that too, yeah.
Yeah, Mac, that was the scene.
Put it in the chat.
I found it odd because that's not a horror moment. It didn't.
Oh yeah, you're absolutely right. That's like straight out of comics.
Didn't have anything to do with the story. I can only think that they're trying to nod toward everyone who just watched that garbage of a Thor movie.
Well, it's worth noting too that the guy who directed this movie did the score for Love and Thunder, amongst a bunch of other things. He like did the scores for the Star Trek movies and a whole bunch of stuff. So there is a little bit of a connection there, but loose. But there's a little bit of connection.
Because I got the other ones. There was Sasquatch, there was Wendigo, werewolf, there was a vampire. You know, I understood all that, but that one was like, dude, that's out of left field. That's like a superhero universe. Well,
and it kind of works, though, because if you think about it, a lot of that stuff is probably prophetic, and maybe like it's alluding to a thing that's going to happen in the future that at this point is now past.
Okay.
Yeah, I definitely caught the Wendigo, because my wife was like, a what? And I was like, Wendigo. And I was like, it's a long story. Like, we're not getting this right.
Do you guys have any experience with Bloodstone?
Yes. The Bloodstone was how they put the Punisher back together and healed him and turned him back into human.
Yeah, are we going back to they did the whole Franken red
castle?
What's that?
We are going back.
We're back to the Franken castle. Yeah, I like that they had that be red in the midst of the black and white movie too. That was cool. But like, I was meaning more like the whole bloodline too, the characters related to the Bloodstone.
I don't believe so. I've seen some of that. Like, honestly, the only, if I remember correctly, that's the only thing I think I've ever read. I have seen some, I want to say some comics where he would be, they'd always show him as like this blonde dude kind of built with this fucking stone in his chest. And I vaguely remember that.
Well, as a given, I had to do a deep dive, you know. So since we've already talked a bunch about Werewolf by Night and as much about it, man, thing as I'm interested in doing, this would be a good time to talk up some Ulysses Bloodstone. The character, the idea was first conceived by Lynn Wein and Marv Wolfman with the intention of putting it in the anthology title Werewolf Monsters Dwell. In 1935. Two strips featuring this character were produced before the book was canceled, so it wasn't actually put into print there. The person who developed the property was John Warner, who had done a lot of horror-themed material. I think he'd worked for Charlton for a period of time there, which might explain why one of the two strips was done by Pat Boyette, who I've only ever heard in context to Charlton as an artist. I think that he's the one who did the Peacemaker series that Charlton produced. But the first strip was by Val Mayerik. So they had the two strips. They combined them together. They put them in the first issue of a new Marvel anthology called Marvel Presents. Then they produced an entire second issue drawn by Sonny Trinidad that was the main Bloodstone story initially. It apparently didn't go over well enough because then they replaced it with Guardians of the Galaxy, and that was the mooring title for the rest of that run, which was fairly brief. It only ran like a year or so. And so the main thing with Ulysses Bloodstone, y'all know anything about Ulysses Bloodstone?
He was
dead. I know his like a, what, didn't he have like an official handbook entry?
Oh yeah, no. Yeah. He was one of the guys that was a perennial in the Handbook of the Dead.
I think I see him in that too. Didn't he also dress like an adventurer?
Sure, yeah. He was basically, okay. He looked like Doc Savage, but with long Fabio hair and a stone in his chest.
So I've seen him, but I've never sat there and like read a book about his history and stuff.
But yeah, basically Ulysses Bloodstone.
He wasn't in Midnight Suns at all?
No.
Now I know he's like somewhat of a Vandal Savage kind of character, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but he has the Iron Man stone in his chest type thing.
He's a caveman. He's going about his business. He's a hunter for his tribe. And 10,000 years ago, he gets this chunk of Bloodstone gem embedded in his chest, and it grants him higher than normal intellect, higher than normal strength, durability, and immortality. And so apparently this had been part of a larger gem that had existed before our universe existed. And it was, it had some kind of ties to H.P. Lovecraftian type elder god type things. And it was intended to be the portal by which elder gods were going to come into our universe. But then during the Big Bang, it exploded and pieces of it rained down throughout the universe. And so one of the pieces was the Bloodstone. And so Ulysses Bloodstone was apparently active all throughout Marvel history, although since he was only properly introduced in 1975, obviously he wasn't, you know, included in as much Marvel history as one would assume for a guy as old as him. But they actually retconned him into a 1959 issue of Strange Tales, issue 73. He is identified in that movie short story as Frank, but he is basically a big game hunter who fights Grotu, King of the Insects, who is a giant ant who is mentally controlling other ants to do its bidding. And what ends up happening is they shoot the antennas with a shotgun, and then in the original comic they pour mounds of sugar on top of them, but in the in a later comic it became like molasses, and so it's buried under the sugar.
This sounds fucking horrible.
Yeah, and I think it was Jack Kirby. And so the creature was killed by being buried under the sugar in one version. The molasses caused the other ants to eat the giant ant and kill it that way. So that retcon took place in an anthology series called Marvel Universe. Mac, you may remember this one from 1998.
Maybe?
So the first three issues had Carlos Pacheco covers involving the Invaders. I bet you remember that.
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
Right. And then the last issues 4-7, involved these characters they dubbed the Monster Hunters. It was a strip initially by Roger Stern and Mike Manley, but art chores moved on to Brett Blevins and then finally Jason Armstrong. The first cover had this cool jam where they did all the old Marvel monsters from the 50s, or a bunch of them, and they were drawn by Joe Quesada, Dan Brereton, Duncan Fegredo, Walt Simonson, Scott McDaniel, Bruce Timm, and Michael Golden. And so it's set in the 1950s, I believe specifically around 58 or so, and it's this Explorers Club. And the main members that they show throughout the stories who eventually were identified as the Monster Hunters are Dr. Druid, Zawadi of Wakanda, who was a woman who apparently got a hold of some heart-shaped herb and ate it and then escaped from Wakanda after, I guess, Chipali there a little bit pissed off at her for getting something the royal family was only supposed to have. And so she becomes an adventurer in the 50s. And then there's a guy who they eventually identify as Mercury in the 20th century, who'd originally appeared in 1940s Red Raven Comics number 1. He was also known as the Hurricane. Well, in the course of this series within a series, it's revealed that he was actually Makari of the Eternals, and that the whole time they were fighting a guy, the Deviant Crow, and that he was the one who was responsible for all those Marvel monsters coming up in the 50s when Marvel was putting out was things like Them and It, the Living Colossus and shit. So he's the reason for those guys all coming up, is because the Deviants were doing an experiment. And so you have this one speedster guy, and instead of having to deal with like three different speedsters, they just decided to make them all Makari, who back then was still a white dude. Nowadays, it's a mixed-race deaf woman, based on the movie. And it turns out that also there was a version of the god Pluto that was appearing in those 1940s Red Raven comics that was also Crow impersonating Pluto. And I don't know if you guys remember, but they actually have Crow in the movie as well. He's played by Bill Skarsgård. He's like the generic I Am Legend vampire looking thing. I know we pretty much forgot that the Eternals movie existed. I get that. That gets resolved. And at the end, there was another hunter. I remember
Bill Skarsgård being in that movie.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a CGI construct anyway. So and there was another hunter in the group as well that was always like a wannabe that kept tagging along after them. And that guy ends up becoming the Mole Man. And so when they consolidate all the monsters that Crow had brought up onto the one monster island, that's also how Mole Man gets to be associated with the monster. So it was this whole big retcon thing. And that group was revisited a few years later in John Byrne and Roger Stern's Marvel, The Lost Generation, specifically the second issue, number 2, 2001. So I associated them with the first line. And so then they bring in Ulysses Bloodstone again for another retcon, Avengers 1959, which I know would have been after Max time, but Freihall, did you ever deal with any of that Avengers stuff during the Brian Michael Bendis era?
No.
Okay. So they put together a pseudo-Avengers team in 1959. It was Nick Fury and Dum Dum Dugan put it together, and it consisted of Sabretooth, weirdly in his Jim Lee design costume from X-Men, Kraven the Hunter, Namora, Dominic Fortune, obviously Bloodstone, and an original male Silver Sable, like the dad of the one that's from the Spider-Man comic books. And these guys apparently got together to hunt Nazi super soldiers, which I think 59 was a little late to be hunting Nazi super soldiers, but they were doing that post-war, obviously. Howard Chaykin drew the sequences in the Avengers comic, and then later on they did a 5-issue miniseries that Chaykin did entirely on his own and added the blonde Phantom. But from what I saw flipping through it, it mostly just felt like a Nick Fury miniseries with a bunch of other characters floating in and out of it. So not much to talk about there. But getting back to the actual Bloodstone comics from 1975. So they introduce as one of his supporting characters, an actor named Brad Carter. And again, it's a weird callback because it's something we addressed a little while back. Brad Carter was in Nick Fury Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. number 2, one of the Jim Steranko drawn issues. It featured Jimmy Woo and the sort of high evolutionary wannabe, but African-American named Centurius, and they're on an island again with monsters, and they're trying to do a revival of King Kong, and that was all done by Jim Steranko. So the actor from that movie turns up in the Bloodstone comic books, encounters him when he's fighting a giant monster in the middle of a city, and they ended up becoming buddies. At first I thought he was maybe a little gay, but I think ultimately it ended up being more like a Kato Kaelin thing, and Brad Carter was just sort of like taking advantage of his fame to associate himself with Ulysses Bloodstone to keep himself relevant. So John Warner had done those two stories, and then he went on to edit a bunch of the black and white Marvel magazines, including Rampaging Hulk. Specifically, but while he was editing the book, I guess he did a little self-dealing, and so he decided to add a Bloodstone backup strip to the magazine, and since it was roughly an even split, you essentially had like at least a full-length comic book featuring Bloodstone for the run of those issues. Did you ever read the old black and white Rampaging Hulk magazine?
No, I don't think I did. Is that the UK stuff?
No, it was from the US. They put out the black and white magazine around the same time they had the TV show, and the first art team on the book was Walt Simonson being inked by Alfredo Alcala, which was really weird combination. Doug Minch was writing it initially, but all they were doing was telling 70s Hulk stories, but in black and white with Filipinos doing washes over the artwork. There wasn't any reason for the book to exist. My feeling was they should have done is like you had with Savage Sword of Conan, make it more its own thing and probably do like Lou Ferrigno Yo Phono covers and do the stories where it's more like the TV show, but maybe TV show with a little bigger budget, that kind of thing. I wish they'd gone that route with it.
No, can't say I ever read any of those.
It was basically the same as the comic book Hulk, which really wasn't doing that great. The only reason why the Hulk book started selling was because of the TV show. Bloodstone, the initial strip was drawn by John Buscema, but it was inked by Rudy Niebres. Niebres stuck around to be the inker on the next two issues as well, and they rotated through artists, Bob Brown on one, Sal Buscema on another, but because Rudy Niebres was inking it, it all just looked like Rudy Niebres, but that was fine. And they obviously put a little money into it too, because they had a really nice pinup by Marshall Rogers, another one by Pat Broderick. Eventually, though, the art starts to decline. Val Mayeric comes in and does a chapter. Toward the end, you've got Alan Kupperberg inked by Sonny Trinidad. Sonny Trinidad, also a Filipino artist, so he definitely could do the gray washing stuff, but nowhere near as accomplished as Rudy Niebres. And so what that strip involves is that you've got this immortal hunter guy. He's going after these monsters. He's got these people who are coming after him. He makes the acquaintance of Brad Carter, who becomes sort of his right-hand man to some degree, his little buddy. And then they run into a supporter named Samantha Eden, who'd been investigating the kidnapping of scientists all over the world, basically both working the same case. And so Ulysses decides to kind of bring her in and like use her to help him do some things, including track down what's going on with the scientists. He runs afoul of this group called the Conspiracy. And it sounds initially like something out of a James Bond movie, but there's also this weird Lovecraftian element where you've got this creature called Luxil Quan Tai Sin, who basically looks like a big green humanoid, but then he's got like these tentacles coming out of his head and sort of like an octopus head. And he's part of this conspiracy. And so he's going after Ulysses on one front, and then there's the giant monsters that he's associated with on another front. The conspiracy wants to find out what's going on with this one giant monster he's fighting, so they hire this guy, Killer Shrike. Do you guys remember that guy?
No.
Killer Shrike?
Yeah, he had this gray outfit with like talons on it and long blonde hair.
I do remember him, but I don't remember.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that like he just turns up and shit. He's one of those utility villains after this point, but he's apparently invented for this black and white comic. He can fly and he's got talons to chop people up. And so he frees the monster, and then him and Bloodstone fight, and then he eventually gets beaten by Bloodstone. And so Bloodstone continues to search for these lost scientists. That brings him into the circle of Tony Stark. He breaks into Stark Tech to try to like communicate with him, runs afoul of Iron Man, ends up teaming up with Iron Man and Nick Fury to go to battle this giant monster that had gotten released by Killer Shrike. Seems like, okay, we've got this three-way war between the monsters, the conspiracy, and then the good guys, essentially. But then Centurius gets a hold of the Bloodstone and uses it to kill the octopus guy. And so you feel like he's going to be like a major threat, and he's a guy who's apparently been associated with Ulysses for the 10,000 years, and they just up and kill him off. And apparently what it was is that Uluxil was part of the conspiracy. Centurius wanted to be part of it, so he killed him to take his place. So they're continuing that story arc. Well, they keep showing bigger and bigger things with Bloodstone, because really he's very much like that 70s revival thing where they're taking a Doc Samson, the Doc Savage type, one of these guys where he's got an outfit with the chest being born and shotgun that fires grenades, and he's a super intelligent international man of mystery who fights all kinds of monsters and stuff. But that's the twist that instead of Doc Savage fighting, you know, international conspiracies and yellow peril and stuff, he's fighting Lovecraftian monsters. That's the kind of the twist of the thing. So he has his own island, Bloodstone Island, with its own like super compound of high tech shit. And he is trying to navigate all the stuff going on with the conspiracy from his base. He ends up sending the reporter chick, Samantha Eden, out to kind of, he wants her to become his PR person, because he's recognizing that the world has gotten smaller. It's harder and harder for him to hide his activities. He's going to want somebody to help manipulate the narrative about who he is and what he's trying to do. So he's got her out there not only searching for the scientists, but also trying to get her to work to kind of like be his hype man, essentially. And she runs into this mysterious guy who runs around with a bowler named Domino, who's manipulating stuff. They don't really tell you what's going on with him, but he keeps interacting with the reporter chick. Eventually, the conspiracy sends this creature called the Modular Man to rescue Killer Shrike, to have him team up to go after Bloodstone, presumably, but that never ends up manifesting. The final story by John Warner involves Bloodstone going to the UN, revealing his existence, and trying to get Bloodstone Island to be treated as a sovereign nation so that he can operate out of while he's battling the conspiracy. And then he's attacked by this villain called Kabbalah, who is in an issue of Strange Tales. And then at the very end of the story, they announce that they're not going to have a story in the 8th issue of Rampaging Hulk. Instead, they did like a Starlin drawn man thing story, which was a riff on Sybil, where you've got a woman with multiple personality disorder, and she's like, one of her personalities is a serial killer and shit. And it's just weird because she has all these different female personas that you see in the story. And as much as I love Jim Starlin, the man can't draw half the population. He's just not really good at drawing women. So have him to do a story about a woman and multiple women inside of her head was a weird thing to choose, especially in the context of Man-Thing's story. Anyway, Ulysses is gone for an issue. When he comes back, all of a sudden, the story is by Steve Gerber, drawn by Rod Santiago, inked by Rudy Messina, and they just go fucking scorched earth on this shit. I don't know who John Warner pissed off with the self-dealing of doing this Ulysses strip and Rampaging Hulk, but they just decided to fucking nuke this shit. So almost immediately, it turns out that Bloodstone was misled the entire time, that it was the Bloodstone that had manipulated his entire tribe into being killed so that he would have control over Bloodstone, that basically he was still a caveman at heart, but the Bloodstone wanted to experience humanity, and so had set him up to turn him into its meat puppet so he could get around, and that the Elixir guy was actually not his enemy. He was actually sort of helping him to some degree and trying to help him navigate the world and shit. Bloodstone eventually gets surgically removed from Ulysses and turned into a giant Bloodstone monster that ends up getting destroyed. And as Ulysses is regressing mentally, he's basically got Flowers for Algernon, where he's slowly going back to being a caveman without the Bloodstone. He manages to destroy the Bloodstone monster and then himself perishes. He turns to dust and skeletons. The Kabbalah character is killed when he gets absorbed into the exo mind of the Bloodstone, and when that's destroyed, he's destroyed too. The Brad Carter character, again, a creation of Jim Steranko from Nick Fury, he runs afoul of one of the conspiracy guys who shoots him with a laser pistol and disintegrates him, and you see the ashen outline of where he used to be, so he's gone. So then Domino revisits Samantha Eden again, and is basically explaining, look, whatever you were doing, you might as well drop it, because everything that's going on with Ulysses Bloodstone is coming apart, and I know you were his love interest and shit. And she's like, nah, I never really liked him that much. He's an interesting concept, but he's a bore. I think she already mentioned something about him having a micro penis as well. Like, just the polling just blows this guy apart. Later on, Domino will turn out to have been tied in with a scourge of the underworld and helping to facilitate all the assassinations going on with that. So he got repurposed. And so basically everything is destroyed. Everybody's dead. And nothing's going to continue from that point onward. And for the most part, aside from all those retcons where Sony realized, hey, this guy was a part of like all of Marvel history, we should probably include him in shit, that was the end of Bloodstone. And because he's in the Handbook of the Marvel Universe, Book of the Dead, and you're always seeing those panels of him disintegrating, you thought that it was like part of a Hulk story or part of something kind of big. And I think they actually had to color that shit specifically for the Handbook, because they didn't do shit with him for the most part after that. How'd you like the opening credits?
I thought it was awesome.
I loved how
the old special intro.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that as a child watching that on TV for like the Sunday special while we're eating dinner with our little TV on the counter as we're eating at the dinner table. I remember that, the spinning special, and I remember that, honestly, when I see that, I immediately remember watching Aliens on TV.
Every network had their own special presentation, their own music, their own visuals, and they were all cool. They were all iconic, and they all lasted for years.
But when I see that one, I immediately go back to remembering watching the first time I ever saw Aliens on TV, and we're eating dinner, and it was like a special presentation. I remember that. So it was perfect. I love that. I love that the tone changes to black and white, and that it's four strikes from the werewolf law.
And it was kind of jarring the first time, too. You're not expecting that, you know?
And honestly, to me, I own, like, you know, Frankenstein, Dracula, The Invisible Man, The Creature from the Black Lagoon. I actually enjoy those old black and white horror movies, because I saw them as a child, and I really ironically do enjoy them.
When I saw your text, I was watching The Invisible Man Returns with Vincent Price, so it's interesting. Right. Yeah, good timing.
So those movies, I have a place in my heart for them. I remember watching them as a child. Cool that they were kind of playing the black and white, and then they start the hunt. I was still trying to, because Man-Thing is what I like. Man-Thing, I've always liked them. I especially liked them in the Warren Ellis run of the Dark Avengers and stuff, where they used them as a teleporter. He was kind of like gateway for the group, for the Dark Avengers, so I always thought that was kind of neat of him. So I was wondering how they're going incorporate him into the show, and then you find out he's the monster. I'm like, okay, that's kind of cool.
I think this was the first werewolf movie my wife didn't fucking hate.
Werewolf movies are tough to pull off,
because I
was special effects wise.
She knows I like werewolf movies, and she fucking hates them. She's had enough of them, and I'm like, well, hey, we need to watch this tonight because we're doing a podcast on it tomorrow. And she's like, well, what is it? I'm like, it's Werewolf by Night. She's like, no, we're not watching that. And yeah, I had to be like, no, I have to. And she actually watched it and didn't hate it. So
you ever tried Ginger Snap, or have tried showing that to her?
She would hate it.
She'd hate Ginger Snaps, really?
Yeah, she would hate it.
Wow. Okay, worth a shot.
She's more of a comedy girl, so
Teen Wolf.
All right.
We keep getting distracted off whatever I'm saying, with good reason. So I thought Man-Thing looked great. I really did not care for how Jack Russell's Werewolf by Night looked. It looked very Jack Nicholson Wolf.
Dude, I 100% agree with you. Werewolf by Night has always had a very distinct look. Thin, and the hair isn't always all over all the place. I thought it was very thrown together. Like, they knew the black and white was going to hide a lot of it. And then the face was just your standard werewolf face from every fucking Wolfman movie ever made. So
I love the look of the werewolf. I thought it looked amazing because it looked a little bit like Wolfman, but not exactly like Wolfman. I kind of like that cheesiness. He had those glowing eyes. I love the fact that his ancestral paint was still on his face. I thought that looked fucking cool. Just his demeanor and stuff. So he was just fantastic. I thought he looked great.
I'll be honest, I've never been a huge fan of the original classic Mike Lugh Werewolf by Night design. I really loved it when Bill Sienkiewicz brought in the Howling influence and gave him the gigantic more
muzzle.
Bestial, more of a mix of man and wolf. And
the yeah, big, but that didn't last very long.
It didn't. But that's the thing too, is when I was following Werewolf by Night in the early 90s, he still had that look, and it seems like they got away with that, got away from that going into the 2000s. But I agree with you, I didn't like the look. I've never been a big fan of that look, and I don't think it was a good representation of that. But I love the physicality. I loved, because like you said, it could have been horrible. It could have been fat Jack Nicholson on trampolines. But yeah, I thought that when he's jumping around and stuff, it looked a lot better to me than when Benicio del Toro did it in The Wolfman a few years back. And I thought it worked well within the Marvel aesthetic for more action-oriented productions. I enjoyed the physicality. I enjoyed that he was so, like the way he leapt and the way he jumped around and stuff, that looked cool. I just was glad they didn't give you too many long, lingering looks at the wolf himself, because it didn't, I don't think that the design looked that great now.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, I'm with you. I like the physicality and the way they were having him jumping around, and maybe to make him like a full-on, like a wolf-looking wolf man, it would have then just been more of a CGI guy jumping around, which, you know, I guess probably would have looked terrible, right? But, and I guess if you're trying to spin him off to appear in, you know, Moon Knight and stuff like that, if they can get a second Moon Knight season, I still don't know what the deal is with that. Or you're trying to get some sort of Marvel Knights team, you would need him to be more just like a dude with some hair makeup on than to be fully CGI all the time, right?
Well, I still don't know how well people responded to Moon Knight, because I hear, like, they're, especially the people who are fans of the comics, were like really, really critical of it, but it seemed like the general audiences liked it okay. But it's like, I just don't know. That feels like it almost fell down the memory hole a little bit, because it's got a few hardcore fans I noticed online, but it doesn't seem like it's part of the conversation. It feels like that kind of came and went to some degree.
I mean, I guess it's just not, I don't think I've seen any negatives about Moon Knight, so I just always assume it's been at least a critical success.
Well, or maybe I just don't most see the Marvel polarizing stuff these days too. It's like there's definitely a fan element amongst the reviewers that as long as it's decent, they'll give it a pass. But I really want to see Moon Knight and Werewolf by Night interacting, since that's where Moon Knight came from. And it's always bothered me. I love Moon Knight as a concept more than I like it in execution. And I always really wanted Moon Knight to be a more of a supernatural, like a Batman who addresses the supernatural. And of course, coming out of Werewolf by Night, that would make sense to associate them. But that's never been what they've really done in the comic book. So this is me, like, I was a fan of an idea of what Moon Knight could be versus what he ever was.
You know, maybe if they're not even doing a new Moon Knight season, they'll have Moon Knight himself appear. I don't know. I don't know how these contracts work, or they have to recast. Who knows,
man? I know Oscar Isaac has kind of a unique contract for that, because the way that they managed to get him to do Moon Knight was to say, look, do Moon Knight. This is all you're committed to doing. And if you want to do something else down the line, you can choose to do that. But he's not, to my knowledge, under a commitment to do anything else, not even a second season.
Really?
That's my understanding. That's the because it's funny, because when we talked about Moon Knight, Mac was talking about how ubiquitous Oscar Isaacs is and how he seems to not turn anything down. So it's weird to me that they structured his specific contract in a way where he could actually turn it down, where most of the Marvel guys are just like, no, we're indentured for the next few years. You know, we've got to appear in this bullshit.
That'd be it. Yeah, I wouldn't be interested in another season without him.
Well, and they can still have the character appear wherever they want to, because it's a fucking CGI construct. You know, he doesn't have to talk, or they can get a sound alike anyway. So they don't actually have to have Oscar Isaacs if they want Moon Knight to be part of the universe. But yeah, they want another season. They're going to need to pony up and get him back for that. I don't think the audience will accept a recast on that one.
Well, and you've also got the Blade stuff that's supposed to be coming too, that they've teased Ghost Rider possibly occurring a few times.
I think they really could pull the Midnight Suns and all that shit now. Ghost Rider would definitely work now. I think they could pull it off.
Well, I thought Ghost Rider looked pretty decent on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, I mean, I like that, but Ghost Rider's always going to be on the Harley. Johnny Blaze is always going to be, Robbie Reyes. Like, I never really read those. I think I read some of Jason Aaron's, Garth Ennis's run on Ghost Rider, and I think I read some of Jason Aaron's stuff, where he had like different Ghost Riders from different centuries, which I thought was kind of interesting. And then I haven't really read anything, but the fact that they they could pull off. Man Thing is just kind of this cool character. Dude, they could definitely pull off like some of the more stranger Fing Fang Foom and the stranger characters in the Marvel Universe. I think they could pull it off.
The thought to have Werewolf by Night be more of your traditional movie monster werewolf, I think, is anticipating the potential long-term multi-appearance of the character. Because for a 55-minute movie, you could easily just make him full CGI.
Yeah.
You know, they're probably not going to want to do that. I'm sure that they've all... I think they know what the CGI is kind of doing to some of these shows. So just like Moon Knight, I think Moon Knight had a lot less main character fully CGI'd than probably would have happened a year or two ago. And well, I think Vision, to me, is another reason the way it works.
The black and white helped a ton, too, as far as hiding the deficiencies of that character design.
Well, I mean, obviously, it was an interesting aesthetic choice to go black and white, and I'm sure part of it has to do with the director wanting to do essentially a Universal Monsters revival, which it is funny to me because we did a series of podcasts on Dark Universe, and, you know, different ways you could do that, and then once again, Marvel just sort of struts and goes, well, this is what you could have done. This would have worked great. It's a shame you didn't do this. You did fucking Tom Cruise wankery instead. This is exactly what I would have wanted from Dark Universe, more so because, again, they went the black and white. I would have never put that out as there's an option. But Marvel totally used that to their advantage because you've got dismemberment, you've got blood flying all over the place. You're able to do more horror stuff than Marvel seems to be comfortable with. In black and white, you can sell it in a way where if you were actually seeing the full gore, they wouldn't have gone with this shit. There's no way they would have shown what they showed there in color.
Then Disney is more comfortable with.
Oh, absolutely, dude. Yeah, there's no blood, so they can get away with some kind of gruesome kill.
You underlined the Disney part for sure, yeah. I'm really curious how stuff like Logan and Deadpool fares under the Disney regime, especially since they've announced the new one of that. We'll see if they can go for the hard R again or not.
Well, apparently Isaac?
I think it's Isaac as a plural. Oscar. Maybe it is. Maybe not.
Yeah. But anyway, apparently at New York Comic Con on Sunday today, which is October 9th, he teased that if you're looking for season two, all I can say is not the last we've heard of the system that is Moon Knight. So
he is a singular, my bad.
Yeah, okay, so look, we may get more Moon Knight. Maybe we'll get some... I feel like they've announced Blade longer ago than any of this stuff, yet I've yet to see a single teased Blade appearance, right? What's that all about? Are we ready to talk about Blade? Did I just skip that?
Blade's having problems because the director quit, and my understanding is they're doing a ground zero rewrite of it, that there's been complaints about the quality of the action sequences, there's not enough set pieces, and that the whole movie just seems kind of bleh, and nobody seems to be happy with it, and it looks like they're like almost like starting over from scratch on Blade. So that's a pretty fucked production. So that's probably one of the reasons why we haven't heard a lot about a Blade lately within the cinematic universe, because I don't know if they know what the fuck they're doing with that right now. That seems to be like one of the biggest clusterfucks that Marvel's had to date has been the Blade reboot.
They're just doing too much.
I do like that you said that you had heard that the action sequences weren't up to par, so they were redoing those. Because, yeah, anybody who's ever seen the Wesley Snipes version, if you go anything less than that as action-wise, you're going to be like, yeah, this sucks. I thought the black guy, one of the hunters who was black, was Blade at first, but he wasn't.
That was one thing. I loved that this movie knew what it was and played to that, because they introduced those hunter guys. They all look like guys from the 90s, Midnight Suns era type shit. They've all got axes and makeup and shit. And so you know they all look kind of like somebody that we would have seen in that time period. Like, I know that at some points they named those guys, but nobody remembers those fucking names. You remember the black guy, the chick that looked like David Bowie, and the Irish guy with the big and the black guy. So we know that these guys are not going to survive this experience.
What the fuck was that chick thing in the white? Is that like a vampire or what the hell was she?
They're all hunters. So the only person who was a supernatural being would have been Jack. And I do wish they'd explained how he was able to fool these guys.
You didn't think she looked fucked up?
Oh, she definitely looked fucked up. I mean, again, I was halfway through the movie before I realized I was a girl, but not a supernatural girl. I mean, obviously a person who interacts with the supernatural, but not a vampire or anything, because these are hunters of monsters who were deeply offended to find that they had been had a monster in their midst. So definitely they're not supernatural beings at all. Also totally canopy.
Her name is Eugenie Bondurant.
Mm-hmm.
She's been in Conjuring, Hunger Games, Fear of Rain, Gloss. She's going to be in the new Interview with the Vampire.
She was the witch in the newest Conjuring.
Actually, the only person in the movie that I was watching that I couldn't place, it was driving me nuts until I finally figured it out, was the mom, the evil stepmother of Elsa Bloodstone. Uh-huh. And it's like, I know who you are, but I cannot quite place you. She was one of those. And you're definitely played a role kind of like this before, but definitely not genre stuff. And it was driving me nuts. At first, I thought it might be the one from The Favorite, but I don't like her, and I like this woman. And then it finally hit me. She's BB from Frasier. She's the evil agent of Frasier.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, when I saw it, I'm like, she looked familiar, but I just couldn't place where I've seen her. Yeah, the agent.
And it finally came together. And like, again, I probably haven't seen her in anything in 20 some odd years, but she has such a unique screen presence, and she was so great in this movie. She's such an awesome antagonistic presence that I was happy to see her in anything again, but also I thought she did a great job.
And there was a Jack Russell in Frasier.
Cute. Good Lord. Wheels within wheels there, Fryhole.
This is definitely what this is definitely that Shining movie where they find everything and everything. Everything is pregnant with meaning. But yeah, I love going into this. You like Mac was talking about how this is a very kind of standard type of movie. We know, okay, well, there's definitely somebody here who's not what they seem. And, you know, let's be honest, we all knew that he's Werewolf by Night because of the promotional material, so that wasn't a shocker. So we're going into this knowing basically what to expect. And they give us the action, they give us the supernatural melodrama, and they gave us, I think, what we wanted, right? I mean, we were all happy with this movie, weren't we?
I was.
Like, I wasn't sure, because the trailer with the whole grindhouse quality to it, I thought the movie was going to be campier than it ended up being, and I was a little worried because I don't think that Marvel does camp well. I thought that if they'd had too much humor, it would have been really off-putting. But there's just enough humor to where it feels like it's Marvel, but they actually played it surprisingly straight, and they just, there weren't twists of the type that I would be worried about. This was like, they told us what this movie was in the very beginning, and they gave us that movie, and I was content because I knew exactly what I was in for, and I got what I wanted. I actually cheered during some of the action. I loved when you actually saw some dismemberments and some like cold-blooded action beats.
I'll be honest, what really caught me off guard was how, not bloody, but violent it was. I was caught off guard big time. And then whenever she's fighting that first guy, and she opens the door, and she cuts his hand off and kicks it, that's when I was like, oh yeah, I'm on board now. Like,
I literally cheered. I cheered when that happened. I cheered when she shot him in the throat.
When you could see it through his mouth, I was like, holy shit.
Yeah, when Elsa Bloodstone cuts that dude's hand off and then shoots him up through his mouth with his own spear gun, I was like, well, wasn't expecting that on Disney.
And I love when she's holding him the whole time, letting him gurgle and shit while the Irishman goes to collect his axe and shit. You know, that was pretty brutal for Marvel.
Yeah.
You're right. And she's holding his mouth to stay quiet as the other hunter there. I was like, oh, I'm on board. I'm on board 100%. This definitely caught me, you know, came out of left field. So I'm like, let's see where this is going now. And then, you know, whenever Mantic comes in and he's kind of like friendly, I was like, oh shit. And then his name is Ted. So I know it's in the comic books, but still, I was just like, oh my God, this is so, it's another comic book brought to life.
We watched the Man-Thing movie not so long ago. And
oh my God, yeah.
It's like, okay, they lean so hard into Man-Thing as being just like this otherworldly evil, and how they got all this Native American lore. And he's supposed to be like this disgruntled Native American shit. It's weirdly comforting Ted. It's just like, yeah. Oh, okay, we're doing a movie where this is going to be about Ted Salas, not about some conception of what a Man-Thing should be for motion picture and shit. They're just going to let us have Ted Salas, the Man-Thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's just, and I love the way that his facial expression changes when she's like, Ted? And he's like, oh yeah. It, great, dude. And so...
Well, what's weird, too, is I thought he was all CGI, but I saw a cast photo while we were doing the other recording, and apparently there is a physical Man-Thing that people were acting to as well.
Yes. Well, no, you know what's awesome? After I watched it, I was watching some show where they were talking about it a little bit. The scene where he transforms into the werewolf is practical. You know how she's sitting there and she's just staring at it, and then it's like this long shot and he's changing into a werewolf and you're seeing it as a shadow against the wall? That's all practical. Like, the actor was acting, and then apparently the guy in the actual werewolf suit, as soon as the light turns off, the next actor just jumped in there and he kept going from that position. So that was the actual practical effect. And I was just like, oh, that was fantastic. Because even I was kind of like, this doesn't look CG. This looks real. And then I got to see that and I was like, okay, that's kind of cool. So I love the fact that they try to incorporate like real special effect. Like, not go too crazy with the CG.
The practical severed hand bumping around, you know, I like them interacting with the environments.
Well, like I said, I love the fact when he kicks it, when she kicked it away to protect herself, I was just like, holy shit. And then, and then of course he turns into the world. I like the fact that, you know, Ted pops up, he kills the big Scottish guy by melting him, which I thought was pretty damn cool.
Yeah, well, and then every time Man-Thing jumped down and set people on fire, I was like, oh, that's a a little more than I was expecting from this. I'm like, okay, this legit is kind of a little horror movie.
I was like, oh shit, they're actually showing him melt him. I mean, when he touches him, you see him like just start melting. I was just like, dude, that's fucking fantastic. And so he kills him. Of course, they capture Jack. I love the fact that he's apologizing, and then he tells her how, you know, he's gonna try to save her by smelling her, and you know, don't break eye contact, because that's, you know, how, you know, dogs have, that's how they control dominance. I was just like, oh my god, this is so fucking fantastic. And then, dude, when he just starts killing people, when he leaped off at the statue, lands on the dude, and just starts slashing at him. Dude, that one kill scene when he throws a soldier through the hallway, and it's like the elevator scene from fucking, what's that movie? Old Boy.
Oh, okay, the hammer scene, in the hallway.
The elevator, where it's just like one scene, and it's just battle, 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 battle. That's, I mean, he's jumping, he cuts the guy's throat, blood splats the screen, the body falls forward, he hits the guy, the other guy's running away, the door's slowly going, but he's not, because he's under this bloodlust battle, and he's jumping around, and he's attacking, kills the last guy, and it was just like, oh, that was a great scene. I'd also forget, whenever she gets the sword, yep. Elsa Bloodstone, dude, she has some gnarly kill. Dude, when she hits that, the guy that that Jack ripped his ear off, when she's battling him, and he falls to the ground, and she puts the sword, and basically, I guess, kicks his head, and he slits his own throat on the sword, because she slits his throat on the ground. Then she fights the tall, I'm guessing,
the David Bowie's stunt artist looking chick, yeah.
And hits, slices that person's throat, and then the sword gets stuck in their head. I was just like, fuck, dude, this was like way bloody than I thought it was gonna be. And then, you know, you see Jack grab her, he smells her, they have that moment, Jack escaped, her stepmom's about to kill her, and then fucking Man-Thing comes in again and just fucking disintegrates her, throws her body.
I feel like they probably were looking at The Mummy specifically, where it was just the right level of horror, where nobody's gonna be picketing them, nobody's gonna make a big stink, but also there's enough violence and enough darker elements to where it's like, okay, you're not being pussies either. So I think they hit the right note there.
Yeah. So we've referenced The Mummy far too often on this podcast for a movie that I fucking is so campy and I can't stand it.
I saw that movie with you in the theater. You hated that shit. And I knew you hated it before the movie was over with. I think that three of the four people that were there completely checked out when the guy is sinking in the sand, they're giving the salutes and shit. I think you guys were just like done with that movie. So I know you hated that shit. But also, you recognize that culturally it had an impact because they made multiple sequels, and there's a lot of people for whom that's a beloved classic.
Yeah, lots of people like shitty movies. Well, it does feel like Moon Knight, and if it does seem like that's as far as they're going to push it. They're going to use The Mummy as some sort of horror template and not go anywhere beyond there, unfortunately, but whatever, it's fine.
Well, I mean, that's Blade is going to be the canary in a coal mine on this one, because if they puss out on Blade, then they're going to puss out on anything else going forward, because if you don't understand that you have to go hard when you're doing Blade, then you might as well not have wasted your time doing it, you know?
Yeah, you can't be less racy than a movie came out in like 1993 or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, when did Blade come out? 93?
I think 98.
98, yeah, that sounds right. But that's like a weird hurdle to get past. It's the same thing. I'm not sure how they're going to do Deadpool either. I don't know. I never saw Deadpool 2, but Deadpool 1 was like a legitimately like lewd film, and so I'm not sure how they're going to play that, but especially now they're allegedly Hugh Jackman's going to have a slight cameo in it. He might be kind of overselling that he's going to co-star the movie for some reason.
I read that the guy who played the bartender in Deadpool,
oh yeah, mm-hmm.
that he hit, like, Ryan Reynolds hates him, so he's never
going to... Miller appeared on the Adam Carolla podcast recently and was talking about that, but also he got accused of sexual assault and has essentially been canceled, so I'm sure it gives him comfort to think that it's just because Ryan Reynolds doesn't like him that his career is over with. It's like,
I got you.
You know, and he did mention a particular instance where Ryan Reynolds went for an extra cut, another take, and basically used that take to just like talk shit to him, belittle him, which could totally be true, but also he and his wife are going to take it more personally than anybody else on the set, you know. He got fired from Silicon Valley over being a dick. This isn't a guy who's particularly well loved in the industry anyway.
Gotcha.
But still, the whole avocado thing, that was great. I mean, he did do some good shit in that first movie.
Yeah.
Allegedly, all over this thing, though, because I don't
know. That is allegedly.
Yes. Oh, yeah, this is going to need some editing.
Hey, Diablo Frank, what'd you think of Werewolf by Night?
I dug all of it. Marvel committing to doing a supernatural horror type of thing, but also clearly very action, still very much part of the superhero universe. It feels a part of the Marvel universe, but it also does something different, and I desperately need to see Marvel do something different. So I was very entertained by the movie. I was very happy with it. I also loved that it was only 54 minutes. So many of these things have been overstaying their welcome lately, and it's like, no, that's just long enough. Is it a deep movie? No. Is it complex and layers upon layers? No. It's pretty straightforward. It gave me what I wanted, and it stayed as long as I wanted it to stay. was super happy with this thing. It was a blast to watch this one. As far as the character of Bloodstone in the show, like, do you see a future for her and those other characters? How did they work for you? Do you want to see them again?
Oh, I'd love to see Man-Thing and Jack again. Elsa, I mean, she could pop. I mean, it's cool to see now that they can do the monster universe. So I have more faith in Blade now. Like, they can do something with Blade. It's not going to be just like some one-off universe where only Blade and vampires exist. Like, Man-Thing could show up in Blade. Elsa gets the stone. And I personally really love the scene where Jack wakes up as a human. When you go into color, it's color now since Elsa got the Bloodstone. And I guess now, like, I was assuming that maybe because she arrived there, she wasn't part. Like, that's not something she wanted. So it was kind of like this fog of gray and black and white, like, uncertain future of hers. And once she got the stone and all color came in, I just assuming that meant, like, now she knew who she was. She was complete. She, you know, she took her birthright. And so when you see Jack coming up and Man-Thing hands him coffee and they're sitting there like just two buddies hanging out, I was like, oh, I love the fact that he's not some like mindless monster, you know, rah, rah, rah. And he's like, yeah, you know, Ted, here's some coffee. Hey, man, you owe me breakfast. And they just have this way of communicating without speaking. All right, dude, I loved it. I thought it was such a cool show.
I like the Bloodstone being read throughout the production as well.
Yes, yes, that was very cool. That reminded me of like Sin City, like the Yellow Bastard, where he was yellow through the whole book. I kind of like that look.
Yeah, that single color to grab your eye. Yeah, and yeah. It lets you know this is something noteworthy. You know, this is something, this is an item of power and shit.
So, yeah, no, I absolutely loved it. I hope they do more stuff like this, because then this was another thing that was very, it was comic booky. It felt like I was watching a comic book.
Mac, I know you remember this. I never made the association. The Bloodstone Hunt was for the Bloodstone of Ulysses Bloodstone.
No shit.
Yeah, the whole point
for
was
some
they
reason
were.
That
yeah, you completely forget. Apparently, the whole plan was to resurrect the original Heinrich Zemo, and so they were going to use the Bloodstone to resurrect him, even though that was never really one of its powers. But Grunwald decided to have some fun with that. And then later on, they made it to where that stone that shattered was a part of the same stone that had created Man-Wolf, the Sphinx, Moonstone, Dr. Spectrum, Blue Diamond. So they tried to connect all the gem people eventually.
Oh, you missed something.
Did I miss something?
Yeah, you missed something.
What's
that? Did Werewolf by Night appear in the Capwolf story at all?
Yeah, I think so.
Wasn't he on like a team of wolves with like Wolf's Bane and Wolverine and Werewolf by Night? Or was it
Nightshade?
J. Jonah Jameson's. Yeah.
That was actually messed me up with Night Sides. I kept thinking that Night Side was supposed to be Nightshade, but reading the story, they're two completely different characters. They're just black women who dress in black leather who deal with the supernatural. But Nightshade, of course, is much more involved with werewolves specifically, and she's more of a bad guy and more of a super scientist, where the other lady is just like a private investigator / mercenary.
And apparently Man-Wolf had a stone, and it was the God Stone.
Oh, I did mention that.
You did mention that, okay.
Yeah,
that
because
I
they sometimes call him Man-God or something like that, but Man-Wolf is what John Jameson, the Escher character. He had one of the gems, yeah.
He was in that story, too. He was in the Capwolf story.
Well, and he got one of those cosmic gems that were related to the Bloodstone. Because remember, he had the stone in his chest, too.
Yeah, it was called the God Stone.
There you go, yeah.
Okay. That's what I said. Then you said you already said it. Then you said that
you didn't say it. You elaborated, though, certainly.
Yeah. Capwolf. Hey, that's a wolf story. Hey, we're talking about werewolves, right?
Amongst other things, yeah.
Capwolf is a werewolf. So was Wolfsbane.
I could have swore there was some miniseries that had Wolfsbane as like a main character with Werewolf by Night, but I could be wrong.
Obviously, my energies were focused more on Bloodstone this time, so you guys would have to.
I want to talk about werewolves, dude.
We did that. We did a Werewolf by Night podcast already. You think we have two in us?
We didn't talk about Capwolf in that one, did we? That would be embarrassing.
I don't think we did. Honestly, that's true. I don't think we touched on the infamous Capwolf storyline. But after doing nothing with this for the most part for years, that's when they do the Elsa Bloodstone miniseries.
I think she was in Tomb of Dracula, but not memorable enough for me to be like, oh, okay, that's her, you know?
She had her own 4-issue book. It was by Dan Abnett, Andy Lanning, and Michael Lopez. I think Michael Lopez had worked for Wildstorm, and he did the Voodoo miniseries with Alan Moore. So he was known for doing like very sexually provocative artwork. They toned it down for Marvel, but it seemed like they were trying to do Buffy the Vampire Slayer meets Danger Girl with this. Came out in 2001. Bloodstone is introduced as an 18-year-old. She's inheriting her dad's fortune after a long lag of not being able to find any descendants or any heirs. And she's moving into Bloodstone's house with her mom, Elise, who's pregnant. They never address that. There's a guy who's handling the estate named Charles Barnabas, who anybody who's ever seen Dark Dark Shadow's nose is a reference to a vampire. And sure enough, the executor is a good guy vampire who ends up romancing the mom. They introduce this guy who's just like a neighborhood kid named Tomas, who's sort of a love interest potentially for Elsa Bloodstone, because again, she's a rather young person. She gets introduced into all the things that Bloodstone would have done by a guy who's essentially like Teen Frankenstein. He goes by the name of Adam. And apparently what they try to set up is that one of the ways that Bloodstone did what he did was he had managed to capture a genie and a genie's lamp. And so the lamp acts as a warning system and a transportation device and basically takes them wherever there's supernatural trouble. She runs into Dracula and inadvertently helps to get Dracula killed again. She has a run-in with Nkantu, the living mummy, who's a character that Warner had written in the 70s. So a little bit of combination there. But really, if you look at the old Bloodstone series, it's much more about the giant monsters of the Lovecraft shit and the Doc Savage stuff. Where with this character, it's very much Buffy. It's very much Universal Monsters. And that's where all that type of stuff comes in. Because the old Bloodstone really wasn't about the classic style werewolves, vampires, that kind of shit. They did that when they decided to turn her into Buffy for the comic books. But the book didn't do that great. For some reason, I can't find sales numbers on the first two issues. But number 3 was 81st place in the top 100. Number 4 wasn't even in the top 100. It came in 110. And it was weird. I remember both these series coming out around the same time, literally the same months. Two Force miniseries with female leads dealing with the supernatural. There's another book called Nightside. You guys remember that one at all?
Not me.
Night what?
Nightside.
Yeah, that's kind
of a Marvel book?
Huh?
That was a Marvel book?
Yeah. So it started a black woman drawn by Thomas Derenick, and he was using a style where he did a lot of graphite washes. When you take Thomas Derenick and you combine him with that, he actually looks kind of like a little bit of Mark Texiera and a little bit of Del Chione. So it was a good looking book. And it was written by Robert Weinberg, who is known as an author. He'd done a lot of pulp stuff and was one of the people who had helped keep the pulp movement alive back in the 1970s. I had always wanted to do an episode of the podcast about Nightside because I just always wanted to read the book. It looked interesting to me, but it came out at a time where I just wasn't reading any Marvel shit at all, and I just never got around to it. I finally got around to it for this podcast because I was curious to see the parallels with Bloodstone. And literally, like I said, it came out the same exact month for the same length of time, same basic story material, and it actually sold better. Nightside number 3 was in 78th place, so a few notches above Bloodstone. And then number 4 was 103rd places. But having finally read it, aside from the art, it really wasn't exceptional because it was clearly Blade plus Underworld, but also corny because he wrote it as like a classic gumshoe detective type of story, but also she's a martial artist and like general badass and super rich and has cool super defense systems. And she's got a partner in crime who is like the descendant of a circus strongman, and he's like gigantic muscle ripped guy. And there's a gang war between the vampires and the were people and all this kind of bullshit. The reason why we'll never do an episode of the podcast, besides the fact that the story just doesn't warrant it, is that I was curious why this character never had anything done with her, especially when you're looking for character for representation years down the line. It's because Robert Weinberg, the author, is co-copyright holder with Marvel. So Marvel isn't going to want to pay his estate. He died back in 2015, I think it was. So that's why that character disappeared into nothingness and why all the interest went to Bloodstone. You had that miniseries, nothing happened for several years. She's, you know, justifiably forgotten, really.
I didn't come across Ilsa Bloodstone until Agents of Hate. I think that's the first time I saw her.
I'm pretty sure the first time a lot of people saw her. That was really her bigger introduction to most, her main entry point for most fans.
Oh, yeah. Dude, but I haven't read that in a while. But yeah, was she in that?
Yeah. She was the one with the long ponytail and the two rifles jumping around all the time.
That's right. Okay, that's right.
2006, Warren Ellison, Stuart Immonen start the cult favorite Next Wave Agents of Hate series. Hate standing for Highest Anti-Terrorism Effort. They work under Dirk Enger, who is clearly a parody of Nick Fury. And I love this notation. Marvel would not allow Warren to portray Fury as a suicidal, drug-fueled lunatic who wears his mother's dresses, and that's why they created Dirk Enger.
Okay.
Bloodstone is combined with Monica Rambeau, Photon, Machine Man, Boom Boom, and the mutant character from New Mutants and X-Men, and the Captain, who's a new creation, who's basically just a foul-mouthed British guy, typical Warren Ellis type of character. They're going out battling unusual weapons of mass destruction. Specifically, they were constantly running into the Beyond Corporation, who I think was supposed to be their sponsors, and they did all these crazy serial comic adventures, very much trying to do what Mark Miller had done. I think actually what it really was that Warren Ellis had done The Authority, and then Mark Miller had done The Authority, and then Miller had gone on to do his shock jock thing. And I think it was Warren Ellis commenting on what Mark Miller had done with his Authority type of characters and doing that as a comedy.
That's another one of Fryhol's favorite too. He actually looked for the hard.
Yeah, I think that y'all had the two hardcover collections and I read y'all's copies.
Yeah, well, he actually looked for those two. That's what he wanted. I'm surprised he didn't bring it up. Yeah, he really liked that book. I forgot that she was in it. Like I said, it's been a while since I've read that.
I liked it. I enjoyed it, but it was also kind of disposable. Do you remember anything from those stories, though? I mean, I like the characters, but I don't really remember the stories at all.
Nope, I don't remember at all. I just remember it looked, the artwork was great. I remember Ms. Marvel was in it. Machine Man, maybe?
Ms. Marvel, or are you talking about Photon? Monica Rambeau.
I'm sorry, Photon, yeah. And I believe Machine Man. It's been so long since I've read those.
Yeah.
I have to go on my shelf.
I mean, the truth is, we're like, that's been about over 15 years now since that debuted. I know, right?
Yeah.
Shit. The book obviously had an influence and is well regarded, and we're actually partway toward building up that team within the Marvel Cinematic Universe at this point. It wasn't a huge financial success, and they ended after about a year, but the character continued in the 2008 miniseries Iron Man Viva Las Vegas, which was written by Jon Favreau, drawn by Adi Granov, and mysteriously only ever produced, I think, 2 or 3 issues out of a 6-issue miniseries. Looked great. It was interesting. Also, Bloodstone had been hired to help them dig up a dragon to put in front of one of the casinos in Las Vegas, and it turns out to be a version of Fin Fang Foom who gets loose, but they never finished the miniseries. Fry Hole, as you had mentioned, she turns up in the Legion of Monsters in 2011. There's a 4-issue miniseries by Dennis Hopeless and Juan Doe where she's teaming up with Morbius and Werewolf by Night and some other characters to try to deal with a brain-eating virus that's attacking the monsters and causing them to become going on rampages and shit. And that's when she starts having a romantic relationship with, or at least a flirtation with Werewolf by Night. And that it plays into Frankencastle as well.
Please listen to me, sir. Jesus Christ is the worst fucking podcast we've ever heard of.
She starred in a 4-issue miniseries in 2015, Battle World Marvel Zombies. But of course, that's extra canonical because that's when they did the whole Secret Wars thing and they had the Earth made up of different Earths and stuff. She's had team ups with Jessica Jones, A-Force, the Fearless Defenders, Black Knight, and Wolverine. Under the guidance of Dr. Doom and Phil Coulson, she joined Valeria Richards in an Avengers team, a one-off that also featured Valkyrie, 3D Man, US Agent, and Stingray. They were brought together to fight the Scarlet Witch. For the 10-issue Monsters Unleashed miniseries, she's essentially the bodyguard of the Inhuman character Kid Kaiju. She romanced Deadpool for 10 issues of his series when he was crowned the King of Monster Island at a point when Monster Island had colonized Staten Island. She's apparently been as part of the Braddock Academy after some of that Dark Reign type shit. She also has some more living relatives. There's a Cullen Bloodstone that appeared in A-Next and Avengers Academy. And very recently, just this year, there was a younger, or actually older sister named Lyra Bloodstone, who has this thing called the Null Gem. Apparently, she'd been sacrificed by her father back in the caveman days and had been in this other dimension all this time, and she was recently released when Doctor Strange was killed. So slowly but surely, they've gotten Bloodstone more impregnated within the Marvel Universe, and she's definitely one of the female characters they get use out of in video games. She actually just recently had a short novel that was released that was read by the actress who played her in the show. I have issues with the actress because, like you said, she's got a major Kristen Ritter energy, and I keep seeing Jessica Jones instead of seeing Bloodstone when I'm watching the movie. I really feel like the whole Blonde Ambition Tour ponytail is such a major part of how we identify that character.
And she's also, so much prettier than Jessica Jones.
I'm more of a Kristen Ritter fan, I'm afraid. But, you know...
Fuck off.
Yeah, well, yeah, you have yours, I have mine. We're both happy men. Yeah, I just found it distracting. I kept thinking too similar, too much alike in terms of their look and their attitude and stuff. I found it kind of distracting.
Yeah, it was fine. It was fine for me.
But yeah, I do wish they'd gotten at least a redhead because they literally call her Red as a nickname for a lot of these series. And yet here she's got like clearly dark hair. Although it did seem like when they did the transition to color at the end that she was like, seemed like she had a red outfit and maybe they were going to make her go red if they ever went did any more color adventures with her.
Well, this was a weird podcast, guys. I got to be honest with you.
Yeah, I agreed.
It's fucking over. Some strange shit.
A little bit.
Well, I did the research, so you had to take
it. Fair enough.
I guess it sounds like we're resolving. We're done. We like the movie. Good job.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was good, but don't do another one and don't ever do any of this ever again.
Oh, no? I want to see these characters pop up in places.
Yeah, I would take more of the, if they kind of branched off into little one-hour Marvel Monsterverse. I think that'd be cool.
Do something like this every fucking Halloween from now on. Yeah. I want this every Halloween.
Absolutely. I definitely would like a Halloween special every Halloween, a new character, and keep it short and tight.
I love the shorter running times of the most recent. It's so much easier, so much more entertaining. All killer, no filler. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, I'll take that. That's fine. Yeah, give me a Marvel movie monster Halloween special every year.
And I'll tell you what, I want to see a Tomb of Dracula adaptation at some point. Some variation on that. There's so much material to draw from there. Let's see Marvel's Dracula, please. Especially if you're going to do Blade, and why wouldn't you have Dracula in the new Blade? That'd be like one of the only reasons to do a Blade reboot.
A new Blade,
as part of MCU, is get Dracula in there finally. Properly, not the fucking bullshit Dracula they had in Trinity.
Well, and he's...
Hey, let's read Capwolf next and talk about Capwolf. Let's make this a fucking 4-hour long podcast.
The funny thing about Capwolf is I actually came back to reading Captain America because, and that was during the time period where I was getting Werewolf by Night appearances. So that's why I got it. It was specifically because of the Werewolf by Night, and maybe Cable as well, since he got involved with that. And that was actually the thing that made sure I didn't come back to Cap again until Garney and Mark Waid were doing the book. Because I was like, I read that. I was like, this, I don't need this in my life. I don't want, this sucks. I don't think I can even finish the story arc. But I did buy that.
That was Rick Levins too, huh?
Yeah. Rough. I don't think Rick
no pun intended. Terrible,
but he's not good either.
Hey, stop talking. Did you hear that?
What?
I said rough, no pun intended. Did you catch that? Rough.
I got it.
Rough.
Talking about werewolves.
Yeah, rough. You can write for Adam Sandler, Hotel Transylvania.
Here we do. And that's it, man. I give it a high 2 thumbs up and a howling wolf behind it. Oh!
Oh! Yeah, this was very awkward as fuck.
This concludes the worst podcast we've ever done. if you stuck with this shit this fucking long, you receive a whole new tier. We're going to start paying you. It's going to be like reverse Patreon. We're going to pay you because you suffered through this shit. Go watch Werewolf by Night. I bet it's fucking half the runtime of this podcast. So stop listening to this and go watch Werewolf by Night. Hit us up on social media and tell us how bad this was. All right.
Okay, so I'm going to hit stop now.
So I'm going to need you to cut the scene from the Black Panther trailer where it says, do not call him general or king.
His people did not call him general or king. They called him Kukulkan, the feather serpent god. Killing him will risk eternal war.
Did you get my text earlier?
You said you watched that trailer like 30 times.
I used to not get, like, I understood why African-Americans were like, we love Black Panther. And I was like, oh, Black Panther's cool. But I was always kind of like, well, I guess Cap's there, Hulk there, my guy's there, so I'm okay. And then when I saw Namor and his Aztec greatness, I get it now. Like, holy shit, I've seen that scene like 30 times easy. I cannot stop watching that scene. It's just so fucking amazing.
I'm a little bit more jaundiced in my opinion of the new take on Namor, but knowing how enthused you've been about it, I've just kept my damn mouth shut, because I've always had regrets about some of the issues we had with Black Panther, feeling that may have been hurtful to folk. And so I was like, you know what, I can see how much this is meaning to you. I'm just going to keep my mouth shut.
Well, no, I love the fact that I hope they say, you know, in English tongue they call it Atlantis, but in truth it's Aslan. And I'm like, if they do that shit, I'm going to lose my mind, dude. I will lose my fucking mind in a theater. I'll be like, oh my god, my ancestors were Atlanteans or Aslans, and oh, dude.
It's a little weird that they apply it to Namor, but it's also kind of cool because I haven't really been a fan of Latin representation in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah.
But Namor is a fucking pimp. You know, Namor is a genuine, classic, badass. And so it's like, if you guys are going to take that and run with it, I think that's great. You know, go for it.
The thing I love about it is, of course, no one ever knew what happened to the Aztecs and the Incas. They all just vanished. And now it's like, no, they just went underwater and started a whole new civilization. And I'm just like, oh, fuck, yes, buddy. Yes. Now, real quick, too. I know everybody's saying that Shuri's probably going to be the new Black Panther.
Man, I hope not. I hope it's Nakia.
I'm calling my shot. I want Angela Bassett to turn out to be the Black Panther at the end.
That'd be kind of badass. I'm open for Nakia because I like the actress and I think that makes more sense for her character. Shuri, as presented in the movies, doesn't make sense to be the Black Panther. At least, I know, like, hereditarily maybe, but the character, the way that she's been played, it just doesn't work for me.
I just, when I see that last scene of the Black Panther, and of course it's a female, a woman, I'm like, that would be amazing if it was Angela Bassett.
Well, if we never can have her as Storm, at least we could have her as Black Panther. And you're not going to get a complaint out of me. Angela Bassett deserves a role like that.
And I'm just calling it. I hope that happens because I think that would be outstanding. That would definitely.
What's funny to me too is you got all these people who are just hellbound and determined to say it's Shuri because of the facial dots and stuff that matches what she had for her facial type. And it's like, you fuckers not remember fucking Infinity War having the Hulk in it and shit? It's like, you guys don't realize that Marvel will fucking lie to your face, you dummies. You know, you're falling for that shit. dead? Of course they're going to put Shuri's dots in there if they don't want you to know it's Shuri. Because you motherfuckers are going to take the bait every fucking time like gullible assholes. Fucking Zabruder filming it and shit. It's like, oh, she has the same facial markings as Shuri. It must be Shuri. It's like, Marvel would have put that shit on there just to mislead you. They've done that plenty of times before.
Well, they did that with the Infinity Gauntlet. See, the commercial showed Thanos and he didn't have all the stones. And then when the movie comes out, no, he had all the stones.
Exactly. They pull just, that shit all the time. Suckers.
So I'm fine with that. So I just think it would be so cool if that's Angela Bassett, either in the beginning of the movie and she's taking on the mantle to protect her people, or I don't know. That I think that would be kind of neat.
But I'd be down for it. The thing is, for starters, she's still in incredible shape for her age.
Oh, yeah.
She did not get to do a ton of stuff in the movie. I think that as an actress, she deserves more than she's had the opportunity to do so far. I'm sure the movie's going to give her opportunities anyway. But everything's CGI now anyway, so it's not like you're going to actually have to put her in the suit and jump around and shit.
Yeah,
so that's what stunt people are for. That's what CGI is for. So yeah, it could be her.
I'm really excited about the movie. Number two. Are we good?
I'm letting you go. This is your forum.
Okay, all right. Hold on. Cut. New segment. She-Hulk is fucking amazing.
No. That's save it for the podcast. We're going to do a podcast on She-Hulk.
Oh, okay.
And I'm really very curious about Max's reaction. I've been very curious because he's watching it. I wasn't confident he was going to even watch it, but he's definitely watched it. He already shut down Fry Hole when we recorded earlier trying to talk about She-Hulk. He was like, no, we're going to talk about this. It's going to be its own show.
Okay, that's fine.
So we'll definitely talk about that. Fuck this episode. This was supposed to be an easy one. This was supposed to be, we watch the show, we do a single recording, almost no editing, move on to a heavier duty project like the next Spawnometer. No. I spend all of Saturday and a chunk of Sunday doing research, which leads to me doing a 35-minute monologue at the end of the first recording, second recording to bring Mr. Fix-It into it, breaking all that shit up, moving shit around, turning what was a fucking mess with all kinds of horrible audio issues and shit into something listenable. I think it's pretty good now, but man, just ask Mac. You already heard what he had to say, what he thought this episode was going to be versus the one you actually heard, which I don't think so bad. There is too much of me. I know there is too much of me. I'm the only one who did any fucking reading, so I'm the only one who did any talking for a bug chunks of this. You got a fucking education, didn't you? Just say fucking thank you then. Permanent Marvelite Maximus followers include Anita Ruthenberg, Anya Middleton, Cassie Lantrip, Cecilia Bola, Claire Rudzinski, Coletta DiNardo, Cora Ecker, Dark Mark, Dirk Wenzel, Edward Lear, Alyssa Fallow, Eliza Mrozek, Emily Rose Galati, Epifania Etridge, Flora Pettinger, Jorgen Bingeli, Haya Manville, Jeff Morgwops, Jessica Dilfe, Kaya Howland, Carolyn Davignan, Kira Thaxton, Lanelle Ellison, The Lantern Cast, Lila Bodle, Lily Hofacker? Really? Hofacker? Sorry, dog. Lucilla Clodfelter, Mark Zajac, Otha Breachin, Otha Zachariah, Renee DeTola, Sharon Ebrani, Tequila Lanfear, Trey Hooks, He, Him, Vicky DeVault, Willis Kurvitz, and Johan Briand. It's really amazing how many very young, very attractive women with roughly 2 to 4 glamour shots in each of their profiles have decided that they want to listen to fat old middle-aged men talk about Hasbro retailer conventions and 1990s Marvel anthologies. I look forward to none of you liking and retweeting any of the social media related to this particular episode, which is also why I won't be following you back. Keepers of the Fayers Flame, Andrew Leyland, The Bat Pod, Brad Lennard, Chris Maiorino, Comic History, Dave's Comic Heroes Blog, Doc Strange, Freebird Comics, The Frogurt Is Also Cursed, Guy Copes, Jason Snick Venable, Joshua Bennett, Capucha Antonio, K-Lord C, Kenny Crayley Jr., MB, Mike It's Indian Aliens to Me, Montana Malone, Nick Spence, Polar Man, Salacious Rum, Scott X, Shanna Banana, Siskoid, Stephen T. Shind, Will Fish, and Wonder Talks, a Wonder Woman podcast. Retweet frantic ones include Dr. Ange, Between the Pages Blog, CH, Nathaniel Devon Sanford, Relatively Geeky Podcast Network, and Talk Nerdy to Me. Among the enough sayers were Clint Buckler, who tweeted of Conan Saga, 90 Marvelous Years of Robert E. Howard in Comics and Beyond. Looks interesting. I'll give it a listen. Weird Warriors Podcast tweeted, Listen, O Prince, to this podcast by Crom. Billy Hines tweeted pics from the Cross Plains Comics one-shot starring Red Sonja. We'll embed it on the blog. Billy added, Conan Saga is a great reprint, put together by Barry Windsor Smith himself to start with. Reading Thorne's Red Sonja for the first time and absolutely love it. Thomas and late Steve Lytle did a great one-shot of her. Beautiful work. And I pointed out that I had picked that book up new. I sold it at some point when I had my comic shop, though. Scott Gray noted of Conan Saga, a really classy production. I love how they used Barry Windsor Smith's pencils for Conan number 7. He also offered art samples that we'll bet on the blog. Jeffrey Brown offered 2 Conan gifts and their thoughts. I have read some Conan comics in like the double O's in back issues. The comics I remember fondly are the late 80s, early 90s ones with art by Jim Lee, Will Portacio, and Mike Mignola. I really like the Rune versus Conan crossover with Malibu. I watched the two Arnold Schwarzenegger movies. Whenever I read a Conan comic, I do think of Arnold's version of the characters. And finally, the Merry Marvel Munching Society, 21st Century Boys, Billy Hines, Canoes, Comics Classicos, Dirk Ashton, who added Thank You, RSP, Ed Moore, Eugene R. Hendricks, Voice Actor, Home Studio, Gregory Litchfield, The Hammer Strikes, Random Geeky Stuff, History of Comics on Film, Hulkling, Hashtag Get Back, Hashtag Wear a Mask, Hashtag Black Lives Matter, Iowa Joe Is, King Size Comics, Giant Size Fun Podcast, Mario DC, Marvel Universe Online Project, Mike Arianna Mike, Mike Davenport, who added an Arnold Conan GIF of his own, Moon Cthulhu, Moose the Hobo with the High Kick Natson, Randy Caldwell, Resurrections and Adam Warlock and Thanos Podcast, Richard Field, Sean McLaughlin, Superbound, Thunderbolt Max, Tomb Priest, The Pod Crasher, Tony S, Oofta, Weird Warriors Podcast, and Vian Mendonca. I gotta work on that one.
The Marvel Superheroes Podcast is in no way affiliated with or endorsed by Marvel Entertainment. All characters mentioned and audio clips employed are believed covered under fair use, with no infringement intended against their copyright holders. The views expressed in this podcast are assumed legitimate, truthful, and solely possessed by the speaker.
So Halloween, usually I like to try to watch some stuff, and I was talking to Fryhole. I don't know how it happened, but I ended up watching Jeff Goldblum's The Fly. Dude, underrated horror movie. I forgot how great that fucking movie is.
I don't know if it's like underrated. I think people know it's great. I just that maybe there hasn't been a reminder lately.
I don't hear enough about it, though.
We don't. It's absolutely a fucking stone classic.
The reason I'm bringing it up is Werewolf by Night was just long enough. Perfect time. Not too long, not too short. Just like, it was just perfect. When I watched The Fly last weekend, I sat here and just blew through it and enjoyed every second of it, to the point where I was like, well, now I gotta watch Fly too. Like, I have to watch it now. I can't walk away. I have to do the sequel. And both of those movies hold up tremendously. The second one, there's a couple of weird spots in the second one, like what's the actress that plays his girlfriend?
Gina Davis?
No, Gina Davis is the first one from The Fly.
Is it Daphne Zuniga in that one?
Zuniga, okay. When she's having sex with him, does she realize he's actually 5 years old because he ages faster?
I honestly, I've never seen the sequel.
What?
Nope. I felt like the story was told in the first movie. I just didn't care to see the sequel.
I think they do just. It could have been a lot darker. They kind of tinker with it a little bit. Oh, the first one I think is perfect, but I always wanted to know what happened to the kid after the first one. Because Gina Davis, I just wanted to know what happened. Because I remember we saw the first one in the theater, and I remember that shit just blew my mind. It was so fucked up. So
Larva in the first movie, that's killer, oh, man. You're not topping that anyway.
When she has the nightmare. Oh, trust me, they play that into the second one. But in the first one, I love the fact when he's like, we'll be the perfect being. You, me, and the baby all in one body. It's just weird to see him like go insane. And he plays it so perfect. So yeah, Jeff Goldblum's a fucking national treasure.
Well, and Goldblum's always playing touched, but that was an opportunity for him to just go full on crazy
pants. Oh, he's chewing the scenery. Everything about him. And I love the fact that they don't play up the fact that he's like some genius. He's kind of like, I know how to put, because there's a scene, I remember thinking in the original, was he like super smart? And so why would he do that? And he plays up the part where he's like, well, no, I don't know how to build some of this stuff. So I call this guy and I'm like, I need this type of laser. And I call this guy and I'm like, I need this guy. But I know how to put all the parts together to make it. And I'm like, oh, that's fucking cool. The movie was really good. And that's done by Cronenberg, right?
Oh, yeah. Cronenberg is definitely somebody, he's definitely remembered, but I just don't think that he has enough of a focal fan base at this point. He's not heralded enough anymore, even though, like, he's shorthand. You like something's Lynchian, something's Cronenbergian. You know, that's exactly what somebody means when they bring that guy.
That body
horror.
Dude.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, dude, it's fantastic. Dude. I just thought I'd throw that in Halloween.
Yeah, I ended up watching the Hulu Hellraiser, which wasn't great.
Oh fuck you! I haven't watched it yet. I'm gonna watch it.
People are saying, I had the exact opposite reaction to everybody else. Where I saw the Netflix Texas Chainsaw Massacre and I dug the shit out of it. I thought it was a good time. It wasn't perfect.
Okay.
Huh?
I thought it was okay.
Yeah, it wasn't perfect. It had problematic elements, but I still had fun with it. I thought it was a good time.
I liked the whole part of him getting on the party bus and killing the people. I really liked, I thought it was a really stunning shot of when he stands up and you see all those sunflowers around him.
Oh yeah, I love that shot. And the whole sequence where he's going after the girl in the car, that was very tense.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool. I mean, it got a little, I think he's kind of played out a little, he's been around too much.
I think the problem is they think that Texas Chainsaw Massacre has to be about Leatherface, and it's really about the family. When you get away from the family, you kind of lose what makes it special and what makes it work.
I agree with that.
But also, it's a theory series that probably shouldn't exist. I really think that they could have made two movies and been done with it. They could have made one movie and probably been done with it. But since I love the second one so much, I want the two. But by the end of the second movie, they've told the story, and there's really nothing else you need to do. And then they made 11 more of the fucking things.
Well, see, the thing, and just to throw this out there, I am a fan of the Hellraiser films. I saw the first one. I owned it on VHS. I love the second one. I own that on VHS. The third one, I think the videotape one is kind of lame. I like Bloodline, the one in space. I personally really like that. I saw it with Pussycat in the theater.
Bloodlines had some interesting ideas in it. I thought was trash because I think they were trying to do Nightmare on Elm Street, and Pinhead ain't Freddy Krueger, and he shouldn't be making gags and shit. They fucked it up on that one. But I agree with you. I think Bloodlines is underrated.
Okay, and then I saw like two more after that, and I wanted to fucking rip my eyes out. It was so bad.
I saw for the first time since I was a kid Return of the Living Dead the other day.
Wow, you hadn't seen that since you were a kid?
No.
Man, that movie was great.
When you called me out on the cunt glove or whatever you called her, and then it's on Tubi for free, so I was like, well, shit, might as well watch it while I'm working. It was entertaining.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's awesome, man. Like I said, I was surprised. Well, I mean, how, are you much of a zombie guy?
I watch a lot of zombie shows, and I read a lot of, like, apocalypse-type zombie books.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if I...
How are you on the horror comedy tip? I know a lot of people, I know a fair number of people. Some people just are not into horror comedies, and so that'd be one reason to avoid that movie. Like, there are people they want their horror, or they want, you know...
No. I can do horror comedy. Okay. Yeah.
I guess maybe...
I really love the design for the one zombie that was stuck in the basement, the bald, gooey one.
Uh-huh. Oh, he's Tarman.
Dude, he was fucking awesome.
Yeah. Oh, and the way he moved. Oh my God, it's incredible. But yeah, it's one of those, like, I feel bad. I've never seen Reanimator. I saw one of the sequels back in the 80s and I never got around to watching Reanimator. I know it's well loved, and I feel like I'm going to be feeling like one or two things are going to happen. I'm going to either go watch it and not like it, which is going to be a drag, or I'm going to watch it and like it and feel like an asshole for waiting so long.
Same thing with me. Like, yeah. and it's on all the episodes, or all the, like, the first three are on Tubi, and I'm always like,
Let's see. I'll be watching Game of Thrones, the dragon shit. Get that over with. Finally finished the Ring of Power. I've been enjoying that. That's it. Oh, and I'm meaning to, I guess, next weekend, since I got some free time, I think I'm going to go ahead and binge watch all of the Evil Dead series.
Oh, yeah. When is the new one? Is that out this month?
On which one?
The new Evil Dead.
There's a new Evil Dead?
Yeah, Evil Dead Rise. It's at one point it was going to be on HBO Max, but they decided to go ahead and put it out theatrically instead. I'm just not sure when the actual release date is.
Let me see. Hold on.
It's a new story, because they're not continuing from the remake, which I didn't know you didn't like anyway, but it's not Ash either. It's Deadites. In a Skyrise.
Right.
So it's kind of like Poltergeist 3 in that respect.
It's called Evil Dead.
Evil Dead Rise.
Evil Dead Rise. Evil Dead. Here we go. Evil Dead Rise. Evil Dead Rise. Up and coming.
Nah, it's not out till April.
2023.
Yeah, it's not out till April. Okay, good. Just making sure. Cause
I don't know how I feel about that.
No, I'm looking forward to it. It still involves, Raimi's not directing it, but it still involves Raimi and Campbell. They're all executive producers, and they're all involved with the pre-production and stuff. So it's not like they've abandoned it or anything. They're looking. They want to see a future for the Evil Dead franchise after they're too old to be doing this shit anymore. And as you know, Bruce Campbell's officially retired from the role. So,
you need a Bruce Campbell type character.
I don't know that you do. But this is where we have a difference of opinion, because and I liked the remake of Evil Dead, and you didn't. But I thought that it worked fine without Ash being in it. I thought it still worked, and I thought they had some really great. It actually was a more pure horror movie than any of the previous Evil Dead. Dead movies, and I appreciated that about it, that they tried to actually
Out. If you're going to do that, then just go fucking watch one of the Blumhouse horror movies. They got lots of fucking Possessed and Emily Bloom and Jeffrey Frank. And
but I still think it had that manic quality, the gore.
They got Poor Man Deadite movies down top. If that's what you want, that's where you go. I want what is part of the Evil Dead, which is Ash or Ash-like character. Could be his bastard son. But you need that kind of weird humor. That's what made that little universe so different.
I'll be honest with you. I'd watch The Further Adventures of Kelly and Pablo if they we just went back to them.
Because honestly, if you're going to tell me, well, I like the darkness of the Deadite. Oh, go fucking watch the Repossession of Emily Bloom or whatever. They've done those movies. Those are Poor Man's Deadite. I need like this weird world that's built that has these Deadites that are trying to end, and you have these fucking weird characters that are the only thing protecting the world from them. I don't need to see fucking another ghost show and just say, well, now they're Deadite. I'm like, oh, well, who the fuck cares? It's like, I'm sorry, bro. Like, who the fuck cares? They've made that movie 1,000 times. So I'll give it a shot. I don't want to shoot it down too early, but I think they've already kind of shot, in my eyes, they've already shot something in the foot. You've already built this great world. You got these kooky characters. I need to see, because is Pablo, ain't he like some kind of witch, like a medicine man or something like that?
Bruja.
Brujo. You can play with all that. Like, dude, you've built this. You have Lucy Lawless running around as like some kind of demon. You can keep going in that direction, and you don't need Ash. You know Ash is there, but maybe he's out of the, you know, he's out of the game.
The series wrote him out. We know that he's there in the far future, but the series wrote him out, but you can still continue to explore that world and those characters and those character types.
Because, not so me, but, you know, Bruce Campbell's going to have to pay the mortgage one day. He's going to be like, I could do a couple of popped-in issue or episodes, you know, just, you know, let my face be seen. Hey, look, Ash is still around. I just, dude, why would you want to, and I get what you're saying, but why would you want to do that if you already have this beautiful world created and you just elaborate on it and make a movie of that?